Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. Working from home is redrawing patterns across the United States, and Columbus is no exception. Between 2019 and 2023, Columbus traffic congestion dropped as work from home increased. Commuting peaks shifted. Traffic volume decreased. During the height of the pandemic, rush hour kind of went away. Those long lines of red taillights on the highway disappeared, and getting around town on a Thursday afternoon was no different than mid-morning. Now, traffic has picked back up since we all started going back to the office, but in many ways, our commuting patterns are forever changed. From traffic safety to converting one-way streets, we're talking all things traffic this hour. We begin with Andrea Nicula, who reported on changing traffic phenomenon for the website Coworking Cafe. Andrea joins us now. Welcome to All Sides.
Thank you for having me, Anna.
Telecommuting has changed when Americans are hitting the road for work. For so long, I think many of us structured our lives around traffic, even if we didn't realize it. We bought homes based on commutes, proximities to highways, public transportation. We consider time of day when we go to the mall or run to the grocery store. How is all of that changing?
Well, the thing is that telecommuting affects traffic patterns in a way that's not uniform, and cities vary widely in this regard. You have to bear in mind that telecommuting isn't a factor that works in a bubble of its own. It is influenced by other elements, like cities' infrastructure, population growth, economic expansion, and so on. One thing that has changed is the so-called rush hours. It's more of a rush day. Remote workers are changing the way they're commuting. There's not necessarily less commuting, it's just that the times and the lengths of the commutes have changed.
Yeah, you had in your reporting, you had some stats on Ohio. So Columbus has seen a 6% reduction in traffic congestion. And what's also really interesting is it's not parallel, because we went from about 5% of us working from home to 16%. So it's not a one-to-one trade-off with congestion.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, if you look at other factors as well, and if you compare Columbus to other cities and Ohio's, work from home has increased largely in Dayton and Akron, where you have 238% and 257% increase in work from home. Congestion dropped significantly in those towns by 10% compared to Columbus. So there are many other factors.
Yeah, the one I found fascinating was Cleveland appears to be a bit of an outlier here in Ohio. They actually saw an increase in traffic despite a rise in work from home.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Cleveland is an outlier in this sense. Work from home had a 121% increase. So what I want to say, though, that is that the higher congestion doesn't necessarily mean less time spent in traffic. So as a comparison, in 2019, Cleveland residents spent about 22 hours a year in traffic. That is extra time. In 2023, that number dropped to 15 hours. So those are 7 hours a year, almost a full workday, that residents spend less in traffic.
Yeah, when you put it that way, all those minutes add up, because even if my commute, say, has only gotten 5 or 6 minutes shorter each way, you add that up over every day, and it does, when you think about it, getting a whole 7 hours back in your life sounds pretty awesome.
Yes, it actually is. But like I said, work from home, I want to make this clear that it's not It can't work in itself. It needs a lot of other different key factors to work alongside it.
What are some of those key factors?
Well, I would say that I like to think of work from home as the main building block in easing traffic congestion. It needs to be sturdy, but it's not the only thing keeping congestion down. You need pillars such as infrastructure, public transit, walkability, smart urban design. So that's why it varies from city to city, because the policies in each city vary, and the way they distribute their public transport and so on.
In preparing for this show, excuse me, I read an article from the New York Times that said we plan our infrastructure around the 1%, and not the richest Americans, but rush hour, the time when traffic is the worst. And for decades, we have expanded highways, traffic light timing, all of it has been geared around that rush hour moment. And it's fascinating to me to think that if that's changing, if that's evolving, how we're going to change the way we think about building bus lanes, bike paths, cars, roads. It's like we've kind of sped up an acceleration towards a different way of thinking of transportation. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Another thing to point out is that if people can start or end their commutes outside of the usual rush hour, it takes a lot of pressure off the roads. Fewer cars on the road all at once means less congestion, especially on highways and major roads. This kind of flexibility is a big help in cities where most of the traffic jams happen during the standard commuting hours. This doesn't mean that if improvements to this area and to infrastructure isn't needed furthermore.
Yeah. Is there a way to pinpoint the effect that work from home is having on traffic patterns? Or is it like sometimes when you want to look at one thing in the economy and say, ah, this is the reason for that, but it's so big and complicated? Or can we actually like measure the impact of work from home?
Well, we can because, in a way, we can because we live in a reality where COVID happened, the pandemic happened, work from home is ha happening, and it's becoming more and more of the norm. However, if we didn't live in that world, would congestion have changed as much? There are so many other factors. If you're asking if there is a straight line that can be drawn from telecommuting to how traffic congestion changes, I would say the answer is far more complicated than that. And telecommuting influences congestion, but also at the time in which it happens, it influences it in more ways than one.
I want to talk about some other cities because we talked about the ones here in Ohio, but you've also looked at places like Orlando, Louisville, and how have other cities in the country, even Chicago, Detroit, how have their patterns shifted?
Well, in cities like Orlando and Louisville, congestion remained steady or even increased despite higher work from home rates. This is likely due to a combination of increased non-commuting traffic, like delivery services and local
Oh.
economic growth. Yes, freight traffic and delivery services, I found was a major factor in how work from home levels worked with congestion. You have to keep in mind, and that's what I was saying earlier, that not every city is created equally. So Orlando, as a tourist hub, sees additional traffic that isn't directly related to commuting, while Louisville's role as a logistic hub, including major freight traffic, keeps roadways busy even as more employees work from home.
That makes sense. Like New York City's always going to have traffic. Chicago will always have tourists. There's just places where traffic is, there's a lot of other factors at play.
Yes. Absolutely. And to circle back to other cities you highlighted, Chicago, for example, faced increased congestion despite the rise in remote work, largely due to its role as a logistics center with, again, substantial freight traffic. Like I said, this was a major factor in this. Milwaukee also saw congestion rise, likely influenced by its industrial economy and declining public transit ridership. Detroit, however, saw a drop in congestion, possibly due to a decline in state traffic volume. This is also something that helps a lot with congestion.
One of the things you talked about in Cleveland is though congestion was up, commute time was down about 7 hours that they got back in their year. What has there been an average increase in commute times, decrease, or what is the research saying?
Well, so the data for time spent in traffic, we have it from INRIX, and unfortunately, it didn't give us the data for all of the 83 cities analyzed. We only have this data for 78 of them. Now, as an average of these 78 cities for which we have data, shows a 5% drop in time lost in traffic between 2019 and 2023. It might not seem like a lot, but if you look at it from like what we discussed earlier in Columbus's case, like there are each minute counts, and added up, it can make a lot of difference in a year.
Yeah, I think that's commute time is probably what people feel the most. Like, don't get me wrong, bumper to bumper is not fun, but it's that total time spent in the car that really gets to quality of life.
Absolutely.
When you were, I know the pandemic, like during the height of the pandemic, those numbers look wildly different than they do right now. There was a severe drop both in commuting, in gas prices, in obviously work from home. We also weren't going out to bars, restaurants, museums, congregating. You know, we hear a lot about how that happened over a long enough period of time that it changed our patterns, that it wasn't like when the Olympics comes to town for a few weeks and traffic gets bananas. It was long enough that we like fundamentally started to shift in the way that we were behaving. And I guess, do you have any sense that it's permanent or are we just on like a slow climb back to where we used to be?
Well, from the data we have, I think that work from home is here to stay, especially in cases in industries such as tech. There are many cities, and in California, that's the best examples. The work from home rates were in major tech hubs. And I think that it's both convenient for both for the employer and the employee to have this type of telecommuting, or at least a hybrid work model going on. So in our vision, work from home is here to stay.
That was Andrea Nicula, who's reported on the changing traffic patterns for the website Coworking Cafe. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Anna.
Coming up, what do colorful crosswalks have to do with traffic safety? That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Stever. You can't talk about traffic without talking about speed, especially when it comes to our pedestrian-heavy downtowns. There are the usual approaches to slowing drivers, traffic tickets, flashing screens that show how fast you're going, big signs telling you to simply slow down. Dublin, however, is trying something a little bit different. How about some brightly colored paint? Here to tell us why this might work is Jeannie Willis, Director of Transportation and Mobility for the City of Dublin. Jeannie, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So this term caught my eye, tactical urbanism. And it's using graphics and paint and color to visually narrow the roadways so people slow down. Can you tell us about this and what you're doing with it?
Yeah, it's exactly what it sounds like. You did a great job describing it, as a matter of fact. So what we do is we use paint or stickers on the roadway to visually narrow the roadway. What we know is that when travel lanes are narrow or more narrow, drivers slow down. So think about it when you're in a construction zone and you have barriers on side of you. What's your natural inclination? It is to slow down and make sure that you're safely getting through that construction zone, right? Well, it's the same theory applies to regular roadways. When we narrow down that travel lane, speeds naturally tend to decrease. So looking for low-cost solutions, moving curb, changing edges of pavement is very expensive. So what can we do with low-cost solutions to test and see how these things can work? And there comes out our tactical urbanism project, where we use paint and stickers and other types of materials to try to narrow down that road.
Yeah, there are three intersections that are serving as your pilot project. I have Avery Road at Jacana Drive, Tullymore Drive at Shanigan Street. And Sells Mill Drive in Arlington. So if you've seen some big, brightly covered curbs, that's what's going on there, right?
Yep, that's exactly right. And at those three intersections, we actually did we tried some different treatments at each one of them. They're all basically narrowing the roadway, but a couple of them had some vertical elements. We used some planters and solid color stickers, and then other ones we used like a tree pattern inside the sticker to try to see if patterns or shapes or colors were more or less effective. Vertical elements, how did that impact driving behavior? And what we found was that all of it actually really helped. We were able to see speed reductions, a couple of mile per hour speed reductions at each of the three locations. So it was quite exciting for us.
Are you guys planning to put more up in different parts of the city?
So that is a great question. We need to report back to our city council and share the results of the pilot projects with our city council, and then talk about it some more and decide how we want to go about it. Understandably, some of our residents weren't necessarily thrilled with some of the colors on the pavement. They felt it was intrusive in front of their house. So, and that's very natural and that's very common for folks to feel that way. So we need to be respectful and try to find that line between, you know, how do we impact driver behavior while respecting the neighborhood where the projects occur, right?
It's fascinating to me that just color or public art could slow traffic, but it makes sense. We all like rubberneck when there's something weird looking on the road.
Exactly. That's exactly it's the same theory. That's exactly right.
Roundabouts, also known as traffic circles, are becoming more common around the country. And you guys put your first roundabout in not too long ago. How does it work out?
Oh, we put our first roundabout in 2004. So it's been 20 years for us now. That roundabout is our Muirfield Brand Road roundabout. And it has been incredible. That particular roundabout came out of a tragic incident with a young child that with our previous intersection type, the footprint, it was a little confusing for folks. And so we had a very nasty crash there. And so we put in our very first roundabout, and It has eliminated all serious injury type crashes. We've seen about a 70% reduction in all crashes there. So it's been extraordinarily effective.
Yeah, although I think anyone who's ever been to Europe and has seen those like 6-lane wide roundabouts where people weave in and out, that's
Yes.
not what we're talking about here.
That is
Those are
not what we're
chaos.
talking about. No, that would be more indicative. So you said earlier that a traffic circle and a roundabout are the same thing, and actually they're not.
Oh,
Two
okay.
different types of traffic control. They have in common the fact that they are a circular style intersection, but there the similarities basically end. A traffic circle allows the right of way to be controlled from the approaching vehicle. And the vehicles inside the circulatory roadway are meant to yield to the vehicles approaching and entering the roundabout or the traffic circle. In a roundabout, the opposite is true. You yield on the approach, and you'll see the signs, the big yield signs, on the approach saying you need to stop until you have a gap in traffic. And then the circulatory roadway has the right of way. So that is one of the key distinguishing features. We also have the splitter islands with the roundabouts. Traffic circles don't necessarily have those, and a few other little.
Oh my goodness, I've never thought
Yeah, so
about it.
there are some key differences.
So it's how you enter or exit. It makes it a roundabout or a circle. Now I can be like totally annoying on my next drive with my husband and be like, you know, that's a circle, not a roundabout.
Right. Well, in Dublin, you'll pretty much only find roundabouts. So there
That's
you
good
have
to
it.
know. No, I never thought about that. So you also recently became the first city to launch a flow optimization pilot project. This is being done in partnership with a Dutch company. So, how did you guys become a pilot for this?
You know, that is such an interesting question. We actually got a request or from One Columbus. It said, "Hey, we've got this interesting company here who is looking to find a partner here in Central Ohio. Would you guys be interested in meeting with them?" And they sent us like a couple little demo videos, and we were like, yes, as a matter of fact, we would love to meet with them." And so from that meeting, we started conversations, and we developed a partnership with the company TNL, our Technolution in the Netherlands. And we did it as a beta district project. So the beta district is an innovative district along US 33 that spans from Marysville to Dublin. And it includes the city of Marysville, Union County, the Union County Port Authority, and the city of Dublin. And so in this corridor, we are looking to test and bring new technologies here so that we can be this living test bed. And so City of Marysville also joined this project with TNL for traffic flow optimization, or what we like to call dynamic signal timing, that responds to real-time traffic demand patterns. And it's been extraordinary. We are seeing big improvements in our traffic demand management. It's very exciting.
So is that kind of like the sensors know there's a long line going one direction and no line going the other, so it runs the light longer?
So kind of, so it does that for sure. It also takes a look at where traffic queues are backing up, and so it calculates who to serve first so that the signal becomes the most efficient. So signal cycle. So when you go to a signal, if you're a familiar user of that intersection, you kind of know the pattern on how the signal progresses through its what we call their phases. With this particular solution, it changes based on real-time traffic demand and how long queues are on the various approaches, and it calculates if this is a shorter queue on a different approach, it will serve that one first, get that one cleared out, and then give more time to a different the, with a longer queue approach,
That's
so
quite a
that
lot of
queue
computing.
can it's yeah it, and it does it all in real time. It's actually it's impressive.
I was going to say, that's one heck of an algorithm.
It is one heck of an algorithm. That is correct. And it's kind of funny because now we have these flow cubes installed at 22 of our intersections. And I know exactly where they are, and I can tell those intersections and how they're operating, that they're more efficient. And now when I'm at other intersections in Dublin where we don't have it, I'm like, oh, we don't have the flow cubes here. It's kind of
I
disappointing.
wonder if that's like going to be the future of commuting, that kind of technology to like make everything work better.
I do think that it really is. The other thing that's really interesting, so we get all of this benefit for real-time travel demand management, but then the other thing we get is the back-end data. So we get all of the traffic volumes, we get pedestrian volumes, we get bicyclists, we get signal performance metrics so that we compare, how the signal is performing now versus when it's not, when the flow cubes are not on. We get time studies through the corridors, so we know how long it's taking people. But we also have the ability to serve and prioritize pedestrians and cyclists first before we serve the vehicular traffic. And then when we have our snow events, we'll be able to prioritize our snow plows because there are cameras, and so we can allow them to progress through our
Oh my gosh.
clear roads first, so that our roads are the safest that they can be for all users, right? Our emergency responders and our folks just trying to make their way on the roads, during crappy weather, because it happens, right?
Yeah. I hadn't even considered that. That's fascinating.
It's a lot of fun. We get to do some fun stuff here. We're very fortunate.
How long does the pilot project last? Like when?
The pilot project is 2 years. So tracking. So the way that it works is with machine learning, over time the performance gets better, right? So they're giving us a full 2 years from our go live date, which was just like a month ago. So we get 2 full years of this service, so we can start to prove the improvements. Prove the data is and the efficiency improvements.
Yeah.
Working, yeah.
Are there other cities around like that are looking at you going, "Hey, how's that going?"
So there are a lot of cities who are watching what we're doing. Of course, our partners in Marysville are doing the same
Yeah.
thing. So they're looking at really the Beta District and the two partners with this project. And I know that TNL is highlighting the work that they're doing here in Ohio, nationally, to get the word out about, look at what we can do, and we can prove that it's better.
Now, if only there was a way to teach people how to zipper when a lane is closed.
Yes, merging. Yeah, it's always a challenge, right?
Yeah, I joke that sometimes, like when you're trapped and they're trying to condense a lane, I'm like, some of you have never done preschool pickup. Like, you don't know how to merge, and it just
Yeah.
shows.
Yes. Everybody wants to be first.
Yeah. How do you think this will all factor into the growth that's coming here, particularly in the cities and collar, basically the collar areas around Columbus? Because we're going to get a lot of people in the next 20 to 30 years.
We sure are. And these kinds of solutions are essential to serving all of these residents, right? We can't build ourselves out of congestion anymore. So we have to find ways to be more efficient and to serve our public while creating safe and comfortable roadways for all users. So that's not just the person sitting in their vehicle, it's also, that person on the side of the road walking, rolling, whether they're on a scooter, whether they're on a bike, whether they're on, a golf, whatever their mode of transportation is. So we can't create these safer roads without looking for different types of solutions. So we really are looking to folks who have been in this situation a bit longer, perhaps, than we have here in the United States, for potential solutions. And so our partners in Europe, our partners in Japan, who have been working on solutions like this for a long time, and seeing how we can incorporate them here in the United States.
Yeah, I like what you said there that we can't build ourselves out of congestion anymore because it is more complicated. I live off 23, which is my own personal like, sometimes it's terrible. But you can't like I look at it and I think about the development on either side and I'm like, I don't know how you'd make more lanes there very easily. Like you could, but like there'd be some eminent domain, some like buyout, some stuff at play.
Exactly. And people don't want their live, like, those businesses don't want that road probably to be wider right in front of their building. Like, that's probably not a good thing. And so it's not a great solution for anyone. And when you just build more lanes, there's a phenomenon that occurs that's called induced traffic. So, and there's so much congestion across a region, right? So the minute you widen any particular roadway, more traffic is drawn to that roadway because all of a sudden there's available capacity.
Oh, this is like packing to the size of your suitcase.
Exactly. So, that it really just simply widening roads doesn't really solve the problem. We build grids. We have to build a more robust transportation network where we can exponentially increase the number of routes by increasing the number of roads. And they don't have to be wide roads. We just have to create multiple redundant paths so that people can get around if something happens, like on 23, right? There's no alternate path that takes that north-south direction in that through that area. So everyone is concentrated on 33. So we need to create other routes. But if that's not possible, which in an area like around Lewis Center and on 23 through Worthing, like
Where are
what
you going
else
to go?
routes? Where are they going to go? Where could we put another road? Well, it's really not practical. So we have to look for other solutions, and technology is one of those. Transit is another. And so, congratulations to the Central Ohio area. We got Link Us passed just this past November. And so, other solutions will be coming our way. And kudos to our region for being a leader in saying, we can't build ourselves out of this anymore. We must find other ways.
It isn't just traffic that you're monitoring over there in Dublin. I understand you're also keeping an eye on parking and using an in-ground detection
Yes.
system.
We have several systems and we've tested several. So we've got camera systems, we've got in-ground systems, and we've got some systems helping share with our public availability and parking garages. So the in-ground system is really an occupancy and a violation type system. So it tells our users there's someone in a parking space or there's not. So come on over, you'll probably find one if it's not taken before you get there. The other thing that we find here in Dublin is that we have some double parking issues, and it's fairly common. Where most often it's a delivery vehicle is parking, in a spot where they're not necessarily supposed to. So we're finding out, we're getting more information in a more real-time fashion about when those violations are occurring so that we can notify our partners in police to go out and help find an appropriate spot for those delivery drivers versus where they may be parking. So that's the goal of that, some education and some help. Because we don't really want that to be punitive for our delivery drivers necessarily, because they need to provide those goods and services to those restaurants, those businesses, and we want those businesses to thrive. So trying to find ways to help is our primary concern there. And then we have cameras in other locations where we get, again, that occupancy data. Some of the cameras are also able to pick up noise. So we have some noise concerns in certain areas of the city. That's also not unique to Dublin. So finding ways to figure out where that noise is occurring, what time of day, so we can get that data again back to our partners in police so that they can do something about that and to help those residents live a more comfortable, peaceful life where they chose to live, right?
Yeah, that's kind of crazy to think about. Like, there's so much. Sometimes it feels a little big brother, but then you hear what it does and you think to yourself, oh, okay, that's actually really cool.
Yeah, and there's really not a lot of Big Brother. I can understand that perception for sure because cameras are involved. But from our perspective, we don't care about who the person is. We care about that there may be a truck, a white truck maybe, or a blue Honda, or I don't even know that we care that it's a blue Honda. We care that it's a passenger vehicle versus a box truck versus a semi. That's the info versus pedestrian versus a bicyclist. The rest of it, we don't care about. We don't even know. We don't keep track of it. That data
Oh,
is
that's
not
good to know.
gathered at all. for the traffic
Yeah.
operation perspective.
No, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Is
It does a lot and it helps a lot. So, but if people look up, they may see a camera and say, "Oh, it feels uncomfortable, right?" But rest assured, we're not gathering any of that kind of stuff.
That was Jeannie Willis, Director of Transportation and Mobility for the City of Dublin. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me today. It was a pleasure.
Coming up, one lane or two, why Columbus is converting its one-way streets. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking all about traffic this hour and how patterns are changing both nationally and locally post-pandemic. Downtown Columbus, especially the streets surrounding the city government offices, are changing direction. Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren has been reporting on this and joins us now. Brent, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
So the directionality of streets downtown is something that we've known for a very long time. You know, French Street goes one way, so do many others, but it's changing into two ways. Why are they making this change?
It is changing, and I think it's interesting. This project, I mean, it doesn't have a huge footprint. We're talking about Front Street north of Broad, Marconi north of Broad. They've always been one way. Now, starting this week, they're two ways. But you can also look at this, I think it's kind of interesting, because almost like part two of a project that was started under Mayor Michael Coleman like almost 20 years ago, because Front Street south of Broad and Civic Center Drive, which is what Marconi turns into south of Broad, those were converted from one-way to two-way a long time ago. So this is almost kind of like the city is getting back to this idea and kind of finishing the job. So those streets now running all the way through downtown will be two-way streets. And that's part of, there was kind of a first wave of these. You know, Gay Street was converted back then, Town Street, parts of Main and Rich Streets. And then there was a big gap where everything stayed the same for a long time. And now the city and, you know, its partners are kind of, I think there's been a shift and there's some movement now. This is like the first of what I think will be a few projects that are similar, where you're taking one-way streets to and turning them into two-way streets.
What have you heard? What's the thinking on why two-way is better than one-way?
Well, I mean, your previous guests talk about it, kind of the safety benefits of narrowing your view when you're driving. Like, I mean, as a driver, I think it's common sense that, like, think about 3rd and 4th downtown today, which are kind of our remaining thoroughfares
one ways,
that are one ways for the whole length of downtown. When I'm driving on those streets, I mean, you look ahead, there's nobody coming at you. There's just open space on all sides, and it's just natural, like, the visual cues are kind of telling you, oh, I'm on something that's kind of like a highway. I can drive a little bit more like I'm on a highway, you know, so that people drive faster. I mean, the numbers bear that out, too. Traffic runs a lot faster on these one-way streets than they do on the two-way streets.
Are there any plans to convert 3rd and 4th?
Well, I think right now what the city is saying, and, you know, this goes back to kind of the downtown plans that we've done. There was one in 2010 and there's one in 2022. Where I think the city and its partners, you know, DCI, Downtown Columbus Inc., used to be CDDC, they're the ones who kind of produced these plans. And the last plan in 2022 called for not making those two streets two ways, but making major changes to it. So 4th, they're talking about kind of a bike corridor. So there would be a at least one of those lanes would be dedicated only to bikes and it would be protected, and maybe there would be some medians or something
Like a barrier between.
And then third, they're talking about it utilizing that thoroughfare as a transit corridor. So there would still be car lanes, but there would be fewer, and they would it would be narrower, so that would slow down traffic as well.
Yeah, that is that tied into the Link Us initiative that has been passed?
Yep. It's all connected, and that's one of the reasons that, you know, when I've been talking to the city for years about these ideas, and one of the things they always say is it takes some time to coordinate this. I mean, kind of the big picture is, you know, Columbus is not unique. Cities across the country, they organize their downtown streets for decades around this idea of the rush hour, the morning rush hour and the afternoon rush hour. And everything was kind of designed around that. We get as many cars in and out as we can. And that's it. That was sort of the organizing principle. And now, you know, city planners have been saying this for years, but it's starting to catch on in a lot of cities and in Columbus, where you're like, how do we redesign things so that there's a little more of a balance? It feels a little more comfortable to be a pedestrian or a cyclist downtown. So that's kind of what they're doing.
Yeah. How does it also fit in with this idea that Mayor Ginther has that he's to create that walking loop around downtown?
Yeah.
Because that's also going to take away some lanes.
Yeah, the Capitol line. So
yeah,
there's a meeting. I think it's November 20th. It's coming up. There's a public meeting about that. So we'll be finding out more about the sort of specifics of the plan, I think. When they announced it earlier this year, they had some really beautiful renderings what it was going to look like. But it's not clear if it's going to be like that, or, you know, it'll probably change in the details. But, you know, when you talk about Gay Street, that's where they want to start that Capitol line. That would be the first phase of it. So taking what already happened, where they took that, Gay Street actually used to look a lot like 3rd and 4th.
Really?
Amazingly. Like, people don't remember that. But it used to be one way with, you know, traffic just kind of moving fast in one direction.
Now it's like one lane in either direction.
Yep.
And there's parking. Yep. Like, you move a lot slower down Gay than you do.
You do. And the Capitol line actually, it's almost like the next step in the evolution of Gay Street. So taking even more space away from cars. So it's going to be probably what, in effect, it's going to be less parking available, but giving that space to pedestrians and cyclists. And I mean, the renderings were really nice. It showed a lot of greenery. And then the Capitol line, the idea is that would be a loop. So it would go across to Scioto Peninsula and then back around, I think, Ridge to 4th. So that's the idea behind that one.
And again, like any kind of transit or infrastructure project, it's going to take a minute.
Yeah. I mean, even just this Front and Marconi project, I mean, City Council approved the money for that like in 2023, early 2023, and they've been working on that for like over a year. It's been a long time.
Yeah, because it's not just as simple as being like, okay, it's two ways. There's
marking,
there's like, you have to change the traffic signals, turn signals, signage.
Right. And the city also, when they do these projects, I think moving forward also, they're going to be adding in other amenities, like they'll maybe make the sidewalk wider in places.
Mm.
They'll add in new curbs. They'll maybe make some of the crosswalks a little better, so it's pedestrians have a shorter distance to cross, which feels a little safer and is safer in practice. So they're doing other improvements when they do these.
Yeah, so we just passed Link Us, and the city just passed Zone In, or at least the first phase of it. So how long do you think it'll be before we see these rapid transit buses hurtling down our streets? I mean, I'm thinking maybe, I don't know, at least a year or two.
Yeah. I mean, transportation projects are slow. And downtown, like, you know, I think one of the things that delayed this Front Street project is when you have to go underground, there's always surprises downtown.
Particularly with older cities.
Yeah.
There's always things there that you're like, oh, I didn't know we had that.
But in terms of these bus rapid transit corridors, there are three that are in design pretty far along in that process. COTA has said that the initial work for the Broad Street, the West Broad Street corridor, could start in 2025. But then, you know, it takes. I think the last I heard, they said maybe an opening for that line in 2028. And the other two, there's East Main and there's the Northwest Corridor that runs up Olentangy Boulevard. They're saying maybe we'll have those three by around 2030.
Okay, 2028, so in time for the next presidential election.
Right.
We'll have to have you back when they're all set up. No, I get that. It's one of those things, like, we put the money in now, but if Columbus is expected to grow by as much as people forecast that it will, I mean, by 2030, we'll have more than 100,000 new people walking around.
Yeah, yeah.
Commuting
and that,
in.
And that goes, I think, the city and COTA and every, like, MORPC, they've all talked about the zoning reform and Link Us as being connected. So that goes to ideas about housing, like, where do you put people? Where does it make sense to build new housing? But also, if you're building all this new housing on the corridors, which is what the zoning reform
hopes,
kind of encourages developers to do, then it would be nice if there was some fast, reliable transit on those corridors just to give people the option. If they don't have a car, they don't have a reliable car, or if they just don't want to use their car for every single trip, it's nice to have a fast, reliable transit as an option.
Yeah. Columbus really, I mean, it's been around for a long time, but it really seems to have grown and developed in the modern era around the car. So it's
right.
Fascinating to me to see how they're trying to reimagine life with less cars.
Right. It's a big job. I mean, Link Us is a big, it's a big swing. I mean, I know a lot of people are disappointed. There's no light rail in those first three corridors. We're starting
That's so
with...
expensive, though.
Yes.
Like, it would have been
yes.
a much bigger tax.
Yeah. And the way they ended up doing it, I think, makes sense in a lot of ways, because instead of one light rail line, you can have, you know, four or five BRT lines. So but it is an $8 billion project. So that's a lot of money, and it could have a pretty big impact. We'll see. We'll start seeing, like, this year and the next what's going to happen.
Yeah, and then it'll be up to the city to decide how they're going to rezone the rest of Columbus, because that's on their agenda for some point here.
That's coming. That'll be next. Yeah, like, and that's when you get into residential districts. So in other cities, that's been like the most contentious, because you're talking about single family homes and,
yeah.
and how do you change the rules around those neighborhoods?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think they were smart to start small, because we did a series on housing back at the beginning of the year, and I was really surprised. I think it was 80% of Columbus is zoned single family only.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a lot of real estate. But then again, if you are in a neighborhood with single family, you could, for a whole host of reasons, not want high-rise apartment complexes moving in next door.
And, you know, I don't think there's any indication that that's going to be part of the plan. You know, they're talking more about, like,
multifamily units.
Yeah, accessory dwelling units, which are kind of like those mother-in-law suites when you have a unit over a garage, that kind of thing, which it's a pretty complicated process to get one of those built today.
And a lot of HOAs can prohibit it.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know if they have any plans to override the HOAs on that particular issue, but who knows?
Oh, yeah. they'll get to it. I'm sure they're thinking about it.
Then you'll definitely see people come out of the woodwork. You know, so as a longtime resident of the city, I was curious, you know, pre-pandemic to now, obviously, like, in 2020, 2021, traffic was wildly different. Do you think it's come back up, or do you see it as sort of there's been a real shift?
Well, you know, I haven't seen, like, the latest numbers on this, and some of them, I know some of your previous guests were talking about, it's a hard thing to track because you're getting a lot of data, and it's hard to figure out what's really happening. But, I mean, just in terms of, you know, we're talking about downtown, I used to go downtown 5 days a week, and now I go maybe once or twice. So, and there's a lot of people, even if they still have an office downtown, they're not going 5 days a week anymore. So you see, like, just anecdotally, when I go down on a Monday, it's just a lot emptier than it is on a Wednesday.
Because
a lot of people, that's the pattern that there is now. So I think that's an impact, and that gets back to, like, how are we designing streets? Does it make sense to have them sort of geared toward this morning and afternoon rush at the expense of everything else, you know, in the downtown area?
Yeah, it's definitely a conversation we're going to continue to have in the years and decades to come. That was Columbus Underground reporter Brett Warren. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. That was great.
And I want to say thank you to our All Sides staff here, senior producer Marcus Charleston, producer Aaron Esmont-Rabinowitz. Our intern producers are Kira Kedar, Chris Corcoran and David Stein. Video production, if you want to watch us, is by the Ohio Channel. Our board operator today was Chris Johnson. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook. You can follow the conversation there or on Instagram, WOSU All Sides. Thanks so much for listening right here on 89.7 NPR News.